Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance?
Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush.
I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance.
Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina.
Now that's energy.
Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other natural supplements to help you stay healthy naturally. We are coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. And we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. Theme music was written and produced by yours truly. We welcome your calls during the live show, area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen by phone or to ask a question, make a comment, make a contribution. Be sure to hit 1 on your keypad there so that we will know you're waiting to talk to us. You can also email us during the week, drtenpenny, Dr. Tenpenny, drtenpenny at gmail.com and attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is March 23rd, 2015. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and with me this evening, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry, how are you doing this evening?
Well, running really fast to keep up. you know, you know. And so I think that's kind of like the mode of the month, isn't it, Alan? We're just kind of running real fast to keep up.
I'm not sure. I think I've given up on the keep up part, but I'm definitely running. So I hear you there. The things just keep unfolding and getting more complicated. Now North Carolina has joined the party by a bill being introduced here to, among other things, remove the religious exemption. And I'm happy to say that there's been a very rapid and large statewide negative reaction to this bill. So we'll see how it plays out. But lots of people organizing, including me, of course, being here in North Carolina, to try and address the issue. And Sherry, I still have documents, many of them linked right from the homepage of vaccinerights.com that can help people fight some of these other bills around the country. Because a lot of these bills, the laws that they are proposing, violate constitutional boundaries. And as I've said in the past, that's not the end-all and be-all, even though in an idealistic world it would. But it can sure be a persuasive argument to add whatever else you want to say to your representatives about keeping the exemptions in place. And I think we may even be able to capitalize on it here in North Carolina to say not only that we want to keep our religious exemption, but here are the reasons we need to go a step further and enact a philosophical exemption or personal belief exemption. So, you know, we'll see how that goes, but that's tentatively the direction I'm pointing. So what's going on in your world? Anything in the Ohio or the news or in the vaccine world generally that has struck your caught your attention in the last few days?
Well, last week, it was probably on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week, we noticed that they had introduced a mandate into the state of Ohio to add the meningitis vaccine to the requirement list here in Ohio. Now, Ohio has a philosophical exemption, and thankfully they have not put a bill into place to remove that exemption because there's a very, very active chiropractic coalition here in the state of Ohio that keeps a very close watch on that. And this last week that I noticed that they were wanting to do this meningitis mandate, and so Dawn Richardson of NDIC Advocacy and I got our heads together, and we put some things into motion to try to stop that bill as it was still in committee. It hadn't even come out of committee yet. And that was what we started to do was to put together a bunch of information. And I sent out a bill. I sent out a letter that said, you know, this is not necessary. I voiced my strong opposition to Senate Bill 121 that required this meningitis vaccine to be added to the mandate. Because if people want to get a meningitis vaccine, they can. They don't need to make it as a mandate. And it was actually introduced by a senator from Findlay, Ohio, where I used to live. And so I sent him an email, which I never got a response from. I mean, I lived in Findlay for 12 years, actually 14 years, and I never heard back from him. And the reason that he introduced it was because he had lost a niece to meningitis 16 years ago. Which, of course, that's a tragedy, and I don't want to make light of that. But when I looked at the Public Health Department records that I got directly from the Public Health Department, and this is information for those of you that are listening that you want these sort of things, it was a very simple process. I called the Ohio Public Department of Health. I had to go through, I don't know, six or seven, you know, went to this department, which referred me here and here and here. And I finally got to some people from the publications department. And I told them that I was a physician. And I was writing an article on this meningitis bill that had been submitted to committee. And I needed some statistics on the number of cases of meningitis that had been in the state of Ohio in 2013 and 2014. And I wanted it broken down by serotype. And they said, okay, how soon do you need it? And this was on a Wednesday. I said, can I have it by Monday? Well, she dropped it as a spreadsheet into my mailbox on Friday. And what I found out was that in the state of Ohio, there was 22 cases of meningitis in calendar year 2013 and 2014. There were 22 cases, and only two of them were in the age group of age 5 to 18. And both of them were in 2013. There were no cases in 2014. And 25% of those 22 cases were serotype B, which is not covered by the current meningitis vaccine. the shot costs somewhere on a wholesale price to the state, somewhere between $72 and $100 per shot. There are about 500 children in that age group in 2013. So it was going to cost the state, if only 50% of the children got vaccinated at the wholesale rate, it was going to cost the state over $21 million to give out a vaccine to all of these kids with very little benefit and all risk, because the meningitis vaccine has a risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome right on the package insert. It also has lots of other potential neurological complications like syncope, which is passing out, and disseminated encephalomyelitis, which is inflammation of the brain, transverse myelitis, which is inflammation of the spinal cord. And so I put this all into a letter and said that, you know, we don't need this vaccine. There were only 22 cases, and the serotypes weren't covered. There were 26 cases of confirmed Guillain-Barré from the Menactra meningitis vaccine reported to the CDC in 2008. I listed a long list of types of side effects. I said the vaccine is very expensive. It's going to cost the state of Ohio up to, you know, more than $20 million, which means that either you have to take this back to budget and start over again, or you're going to have to defund other programs like maybe food stamps or Medicare or roads and highways and bridges or some other type of funding to come up with this large amount of money to vaccinate all these kids, because that's how much the state is going to need to take care of, like, Medicaid patients, patients on general assistance, and people in the Obamacare exchanges, because that's federal money. And so, that cost of that vaccine will be spread about every other person who has private insurance, so their insurance rates will go up whether or not they even have children, or if they want to claim an exemption. And so it was going to cost Ohioans a lot of money to mandate a vaccine that was completely unnecessary and all risk and no benefit. So it hasn't come out of committee. That was submitted. I submitted that last week, sent it to a few of my activist friends here in the state of Ohio, sent it to the head of the Ohio Chiropractic Association, Baron Hogue, who's a friend of mine. He sent it out to the list of chiropractors, asking them to, you know, change it, morph it, modify it, print it, and have their patients send this in to the state of Ohio. So when I just looked right before we went on air, it had not come out of committee yet. And I know when I called down there and actually talked to the senator who's the head of the Health and Wellness Committee, her aide or assistant said, yeah, there's a lot of controversy about this bill because, you know, there's just a lot of controversy about it. It isn't really clear cut. So I'm hoping that perhaps we shut that down for the sake of the state of Ohio before it even got out of committee. And these are the sorts of actions that you can do. Pull together your facts. Dawn Itcherson over at NVIC will help you. NVIC Advocacy will help you write a letter, help you write an alert you can put on your Facebook page, you can send out to your constituents. You can be really firm about what you say, even though you can say it nicely. And so I'm hoping that these are the sorts of things that people will take action and do in North Carolina, because that just came up. And in all the other states, if you go to NVIC Advocacy, you can, right on the homepage, you can see all the lists of states where you have active bills trying to take away your rights.
Sherry, that's just absolutely brilliant. I never cease to be amazed at how sharp and clear and focused you are with the research and work that you do. And that's just, you know, thank you for doing that. I would love to see a copy of that, even though we're not dealing with that issue. But I think that would serve as a really good model for whenever we are dealing with a specific addition of a vaccine. Something has come up in, I know, Illinois and other states from time to time where in Illinois, it may have been the House that put together a resolution asking the health department to make some sort of changes. And I'd gotten some emails from people asking about, can they do that? And the laws are written different in every state, Sherry, and sometimes the legislature has to approve any additions to the vaccine schedule, but other times the legislature will just delegate that authority to the health department, and then whatever the health department wants to do, they can do it. And I think this resolution, a resolution is not a law when the Congress or a state legislature or a portion of a legislature, a bunch of them get together and they'll pass a resolution. And a lot of people see that and they think, oh, now there's a law that says such and such. But no, a resolution isn't a law. But it is the legislature trying to use the weight of its authority to state a position, or in this case in Illinois, to get the health department to make some changes. And whether or not the health department can do that of its own accord will just depend on how the laws have been written. As the legislature delegated this authority to the health department so that they can add vaccines whenever they want to, for example. So it sounded to me like what was going on in Illinois is they were just trying to encourage the health department in as formal a way as they could to exercise authority that it probably already had, although I haven't looked at the laws to confirm that, but seemed like it was the case. And some people find this really disturbing, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, Sherry. The idea of having people in the health department, I mean, they're the health experts, right? You know, they should be the ones making health decisions in a perfect world. But, of course, people in the alternative vaccine arena are really nervous about having anything go on that doesn't potentially involve public input to do the sort of thing that you just described, which is absolutely wonderful, to spell it out. And, of course, probably legislators can hear dollars and cents as well or better than they can hear anything else. And if you can point out to them that a proposed change in vaccine laws is going to create problems economically, I bet you that's where we have some of the best leverage. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I can't imagine any legislator, no matter how pro-vaccine they are in their own personal belief system, could sit up there and say, yes, you're absolutely right, we need to spend $80 million on this. You know, when the states are broke, you know, the states are absolutely broke, and they're, you know, bridges are falling down and highways, you know, need repair, and it's now, you know, orange barrel season coming up right now in the spring around here. I mean, it's just terrible. They got the roads all torn up, and because we had such a harsh winter, I mean, the potholes are as big as your car, and, you know, we don't have money for, you know, education, and the schools are old, and, I mean, the list could go on and on. And then even, like, just main things like unemployment, food stamps, I mean, the things at the lower ends of society that always gets lopped off, you know, when they need something for defense spending or something on a federal level. And so I don't think that we put enough focus on the fact how much money each one of these mandates costs the state. And who is the state? You and me, Alan. You know, increase in our taxes. You know, that I'm sure you've seen that thing floating around the internet that it says, you know, prior to this year, and it was prior to 1913 or something like that, we didn't have, like, income tax and cigarette tax and gas tax and highway tax and, I mean, tax and tax and tax and tax and tax, that it goes on. Well, where is the funding going to come from for these vaccines? And even if my number was high, maybe, you know, if there's 500,000 kids and it's $100 a dose, well, that's $50 million. I took it down to like $21 million. What if it was only 10? Or what if it was 8? Are we going to spend that much money with potential risk, to real risk to children, to get this vaccine? And then what if those kids have a side effect or reaction? Who's going to track those health care dollar costs and add that actually to the cost of the vaccine? Because that's another cost of these vaccines that we never track or follow or know anything about. And if we looked at, like, the list of potential side effects in a package insert, and even if we used their numbers and said, oh, these side effects are like 1 in 1,000,000, well, a perfect example is like the flu shot. You know, in any given year, there might be 76 million people of all age groups that get a flu shot. According to the CDC, to the package insert, it said the risk of Guillain-Barré is 1 to 2 per 1,000,000. Well, if we gave 76 million doses, that means that we got somewhere between 76 and about 150 cases of Guillain-Barré from, or potential cases of Guillain-Barré from the flu shot. And if each case of Guillain-Barré costs $100,000 in terms of hospitalization, being on a ventilator, going to rehab, time missed from work, time, you know, taxes that are missed because you've missed time from work, and all of these other things, if you add that all into the cost and you did that for every single side effect that's potentially listed on each one of the vaccines, that the cost is astronomical. And that we could do something like that in the state of Ohio for a vaccine that we don't even need, and that's all risk and no benefit. I think that, you know, I don't think that once it's kind of laid out like that, of course, any senator in any state, because every state is scrapping right now with it with really tight budgets, that they could say, yeah, I still think that's a good idea. Let's go spend $20 million on that vaccine.
Well, Sherry, one of the things that's gone on that is quite unwitting. It's really interesting. I have a local friend has scheduled an appointment for the two of us to talk with our local senator later this week, and she happens to be one of the co-sponsors of the bill here. And apparently on a telephone call between the friend and the senator, there was some discussion about, and to this senator's dismay, that somebody had accused her of being in the pocket of Big Pharma, something to that effect, and she was just really taken aback and confused and hurt by this. And a lot of these people really do, really just are clueless about the vaccine controversy and really do think they're doing the right thing. And so there may be some who aren't in that category as well, but it's like, I'm not sure when I sit down with her, do I want to say, well, I realize it's unwitting on your part, but yes, you are. And what has really happened, Sherry, and it's an interesting question strategically as to whether or not or how we try to communicate it, but the bottom line is the media and the legislatures have become marketing departments for the pharmaceutical industry. And unwittingly, I suspect, at least on the front lines, of those entities and organizations. But that's really what it's come down to. And so we've got to bring information to our legislators to help them understand that they've been given either incomplete or in some cases outright misinformation. And, we're telling them that they've been duped or deceived, or at least there is a message there that could be given to them. And as to how or when you say that in any given instance, I suppose you have to kind of play it by ear and see what really makes sense at any given point. But that's really kind of a bottom line here. It's such an inherently complex issue on so many levels, but there are these occasional soundbite gems that come to mind. And one of them is, however unwittingly, the legislature has become a marketing arm of the pharmaceutical industry, and we need to step back and pull out the politics and the marketing.
Yeah, and I think, Alan, that, depending on how you manage your legislator, because that's what you're there to do, to manage them and tell them how you want them to vote on your bill,
yep.
not to ask them, to tell them, if you're going to spend the time to take time off from your job and your work to go down there and have a meeting with them, you're not there to say, please vote for my bill. You're there to, or not to vote for my bill. You're there to say, I spent the time to come down here to tell you this is how I want you to vote. And I think that how you propose to do that depends on your legislator. I mean, it's like any other type of negotiation or personal interaction. Some people, need a ball bat to the side of the head, and some people need to be taken by the hand and led over and sat down and have high tea, And it's kind of like the personality of the person in front of you and the exchange that you're having, that you decide what is the best way to work with that person. And that can be, your own personal clients in your law practice, or if you're a litigator. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways to deal with human behavior. And I think it's important to have all kinds of different scenarios and maybe role plays and different options depending on what ends up sitting in front of you, don't you think?
I agree with you completely. The ideal interaction is not any one prescribed thing, although you want to go in organized with a set of information and, of course, a real clear position on whatever the bill is. But yes, ideally, we would try to see who they are and in connection, in relationship to who we are as well. And what can we do? But a lot of these people, Sherry, people have recommended in the past, and I think it's wise, that we seek to develop long-term relationships, because some of these people have been there or will be there for a long time. And if we can develop a rapport. You know, if we come in with our I's dotted and T's crossed and we get a reputation with this person or these people as people who do their homework, so they know that when we walk in the door and they sit down with us, oh, yeah, this is so-and-so. This is somebody who always does their research and comes in with, you know, facts. So this is someone I want to pay attention to. You know, that would be one of my goals, to not necessarily hit them with everything I'd like to hit them with all at once in the first meeting, but to establish a rapport, a relationship, and some credibility. Here's who I am. Here's what I do. Here are my concerns. Here are the facts. Here are the references for these facts. And this is, you know, why, you know, I want what I want here out of the situation. So, but yeah,
you know,
it could ultimately
I think that one of our tactics needs to change the focus a little bit. Is a little bit less on the science and a little bit more on the economics. Maybe a whole lot more, because remember the same. You know, we're going in there saying, here's the science on our side, and this is why we don't want to give this to our kids. And the pharmaceutical lobbyist is coming in on the other side saying, oh, if you don't give them this vaccine and you don't vote for this, it could be on your head if there was an outbreak here. And so, you know, and I will tell you that it was actually what was told to me by my senator, Sherrod Brown. It was my senator in the state of Ohio. This was several years ago. I was in Washington, D.C. at a lobbying event. Can't even remember why I was there. This was probably 6 or 7 years ago. Has he been the senator that long? I mean, however long. And there was a lobbying event. He was there that morning. We were there. We wanted to talk. It was when, I believe, the swine flu thing or something was going on. And we talked about it a little bit. And, you know, I do some work with Charlie Brown, who's the Sherrod Brown's brother. And Charlie Brown is the big, you know, anti-mercury guy that's got a lot of things done with the mercury removal. So I talked to him a little bit in just little sound bites, which is that's really what they want, is sound bites. I mean, your state legislators are a little different than your national ones. But he said to me, he said, you know, I can't not, he said, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not going to be the guy that votes against this vaccine and then there's a pandemic that happens and I wasn't the one who voted to fund it. He told me that flat out. So, again, it's about the money.
Yeah, well, you know, a big part of what got us where we are today is this emotion-based mental programming, brainwashing, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think it's deliberate, Sherry. You know, if I understand correctly what I've heard from others and possibly you as well, that students in med school aren't really told much information-wise about vaccines, but they're shown pictures of the children dying from infectious diseases. And it's a horrible thing. There's no question about it. But when you see something like that, you're being conditioned on an emotional level and you're not, you know, looking at the issue objectively. And, of course, they don't even hear about the compensation program, for example, to do any sort of compare and contrast with that. But I think you're absolutely right. I think they can probably hear money when there is a money issue. You know, something that was brought up in recent days is that if some of these exemptions are successfully repealed or lost, that there's going to be a lot of people jumping out of the public schools into either homeschool or possibly leaving the state. And that's going to pull bodies out of the classroom, and that means fewer federal dollars for education. And I think this is probably an angle that the legislators introducing this bill aren't thinking about at all. What is the economic impact in that respect, which is just another piece of the list of things that you listed earlier, that the ramifications here go much farther than anyone is thinking about, just on a pure economic level. So I think you've got a really good point there, that if we where it makes sense, where there is something economic to bring out, that we look at that piece and add that to our concerns to share with our legislators.
I think that I was just going to say, you know, we talked about it before, that the most important thing that mean anything to any legislator, it doesn't matter if they're your local congressman, if they're your state senator, or if they're your national congressman, your national senator. I mean, what matters to them, really at the core, what matters to them is votes and money. And money not even just necessarily like pharmaceutical money or things like that. But, you know, years and years and years ago, I went to, like, I believe it was a Republican National Roundtable in Washington, D.C., and I'm no longer a party person. I'm not Republican or Democrat, you know, kind of more libertarian than anything. But I went to one of those just to see what it was like. And I remember there was a cocktail party that night, and I remember this kind of a youngish senator from South Dakota came over to our table, or we were it was sort of a wine and cheese sort of stand-up talking thing. And, you know, he was so honest when he said, you know, it's not really what I thought it was going to be when I got down here to Washington. He was from South Dakota. He said, from the time you get here, the minute that you, like, walk in and put your pen in the drawer, you have to start raising money. And it's about money for, you know, for your next election. You have to start right away because you're only going to be there for 2 years as a congressman. And if you don't start raising money there, if you intend to come back, you're always behind the eight ball. And it's the hardest job in the world because you sit down with somebody who comes in and says, I want you to vote for this farm bill. And they lay out all the reasons why they want you to vote for the farm bill. And you say, okay, thank you very much. The next person walks in the door. I want you to vote no on this farm bill. And here's all the reasons why. He said, you're always making somebody mad. Always. And so, you know,
right.
It's such a kind of a peek behind the curtain of reality of what it's like to be, you know, in public office.
Yeah. Well, and that's a really good point. Thanks for sharing, Sherry, because, we do need to understand what it looks like from their point of view the best we can, because then that tells us what we're really speaking to.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and take our break here. We're just a little bit past the halfway mark here. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to take a short break. We will be right back with you. We've got a whole second half of the show to go, so stick around, folks. Lots more to talk about.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy.
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called
Ultra Rush.
I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with AlterRush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back live with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. I want to remind you to push 1 on your keypad if you want to talk to us with a question or comment. And when you've got time, go to drtenpenny.com, drtenpenny.com, or thevaccineresearchlibrary.com to research any of the 6,500 and growing and counting peer-reviewed published research studies showing problems with vaccines. And be sure and see Sherry's newer website, edgytruth.com. And you can subscribe to the Vaccine Rights e-newsletter at vaccinerights.com at that website. And then every Tuesday night, the Vaccine Agenda Internet Radio Show at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Tomorrow night, we're going to have attorney Robert Krakow talk to us about his experience with the Injury Compensation Program. And, of course, we'll do some updates on the national vaccine legislative crisis. Sherry, just tons of stuff going on in the news. There was an article talking about how the Supreme Court may be looking at the vaccine courts standards are, because only something historically in the history of the program, something roughly on the order of, I think, a 25% of cases actually ever see any compensation. Most of them get dismissed. And there's been a case now that they're asking the Supreme Court to take. And then the Supreme Court gets asked to take cases all the time, and they only end up taking, I don't know, 1 or 2 or maybe 3%. So in that respect, the odds are slim. But this would be a good case, I think, for the court to take, because the proposition here, the concern here, is that they are holding the standard too high. And at least as this program was initially created back in 1986 with the Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, the whole purpose of this was to make it easier for vaccine victims to get some compensation rather than having to battle it out in state court systems with traditional personal injury laws. And, of course, to protect the industry from liability. You know, the Supreme Court did a case in 2011 where they said that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. And instead of doing what would look logical to many of us, which is, oh, well, then maybe people shouldn't be getting vaccines if they're unavoidably unsafe. But no. Instead of that, what happened was we gave liability to the people who are freedom from liability to the people who are making them. They're unavoidably unsafe, so we better just make sure that nobody gets, you know, in trouble for that. It just seems so crazy. You have to laugh to keep from crying, because, of course, there's nothing funny about vaccine injuries and deaths, and I hope nobody, you know, mistook my laughter there, but it's just, it's so insane. But anyway, we don't know whether the Supreme Court will take the case yet or not, but they're being asked to, and I think it would be potentially a good thing for the court to look at. You have any thoughts about that one way or the other, Sherry?
Well, it's you know how lawsuits and things like that can go, Alan. I mean, it could either be that they look at this and say, you know, if we're going to force all these mandates and make all of these people get all, and all these kids get all of these shots, it's my opinion that they ought to repeal the injury compensation program, because how can you force me to take on all the risk if you have zero liability? So with this whole thing of opening this up, it could be that it opens a pathway to allow more people more easily to go through the court, through that system, to be able to get compensation. On the other hand, they could say, oh, wow, maybe we shouldn't even have this here at all, you know, and maybe we make it, at the end of the day, it gets tighter. Because remember whatever year that was that they tried to do away with the religious exemption in Arkansas, and everybody was holding their breath to see what would happen with that. And at the end of the day, you could speak to the law of that better than I can, Alan, but at the end of the day, they decided that they couldn't have religious discrimination, and so therefore they really did away with the religious exemption and made it, for all intents and purposes, a philosophical exception. And so that kind of went in our favor, but it could have just as easily gone in the other direction. So, you know, it can go either way, I think. And if it makes it easier for people to get compensation, I mean, right now we know that less than 1 in 4 people who actually even apply for compensation even get some, and it can take years. I mean, it can take 2 to 3 years now. It used to take a decade. The whole system is wrong. It's good that you've got a compensation program that can compensate people for getting injured. It's not good, in my opinion, that we've got an entire industry that makes $42 to $50 billion a year off of vaccines, and then all the rest of the tests and everything that come along to vaccine injured people in that pharmaceutical area, and then you end up on lifetime medications. They only benefit, and we the general people take on all the risk.
Well, Sherry, first of all, I just want to corroborate express my strong agreement. I really think they should do away with the whole program altogether. You know, the reason it was really put in place was to remove liability from the industry because the companies were pulling out of the vaccine market. And, you know, like with any other industry or product, if you can't make a product whose benefits outweigh the risks, you know, that if you can't make a product that's safe enough or effective enough, people aren't going to purchase it, and that's called the free market system. And I'm not suggesting it always works the way it's supposed to, but, you know, for the government to step in and say, you know, these products, which are unavoidably unsafe, we need to give more and more of them out to more and more people all the time and remove liability. I mean, it's just crazy that they should have no liability. But the door's open. Yeah, it's wide open. The federal government subsidizes vaccine research and development, billions of dollars a year. State and federal governments mandate vaccines. They purchase vaccines. And if anything goes wrong, most people don't even know the injury compensation program is there, Sherry. I've talked to several of the – there's, gosh, about 140 attorneys in the country now that take vaccine injury and death cases. And I've talked to a few of them, and they all say the same thing, that they get several calls a week or per month from people who they can't help, not because they don't have a good case, but because they've missed the statute of limitations. They didn't know that the program was even out there. And when they finally found out about it, it was too late. They had missed a time deadline. And if they did nothing more right now than enforce a federal law that's already on the books that says doctors, before they administer vaccines to children, have to give a piece of paper to the parent, supposedly talking about the risks and benefits, but also informing them about the existence of this program. If doctors all around the country consistently did that, we would probably multiply the number of petitions in this program. And, of course, the payouts as well.
Yep. And that was one of the reasons it was one of the reasons I did this full court press on this letter about this fact that we talked about at the beginning of the show about the meningitis letter, because even though the state of Ohio has a philosophical exemption, so you have a right to say no, the vast majority of people don't know that they can say no. And so that was the reason why I took that on, and I'm going to continue to follow up with it, because people don't know. I mean, people don't know. In fact, you know, I said years ago that if I won the lotto, I'd put up billboards in every state on every highway that says, no shots, no school, not true. And some people took me up on that. I said that a lot on the radio, and some people raised some money and actually put up some billboards. And unfortunately, unless we stay on top, they did. I've got pictures of them in my computer. And, you know, but unless we all stay on top of this, and the other thing that people really have to understand, and Alan, I know you and I talked about this before, but this isn't just about childhood vaccines and those exemptions. I mean, this California statute actually says, right in the statute, it says that we want to take away all rights to refuse, not only the current vaccines, but we have the right to put any additional vaccines requirement for school in the future. Now, I'm sort of paraphrasing on what the language is. It's a little more succinct than that. But if they can continue to add more and more and more vaccines as requirements, and there's no way of getting out of it, if they are not going to stop until they get to 100% vaccination rate, then we're going to have all vaccinated children, and we're not going to know what normal looks like anymore. We're not going to know what it looks like to be unvaccinated and not have any problems. And so that's going to become the new normal, and that's really scary.
I had a phone message just today, Sherry. I think you're going to love this. The caller is someone who's called into our show in the past, and she says, we need to have a label for the unvaccinated kids who are meeting all their milestones and doing super well and better than the vaccinated kids. And I think, if I remember what she said, something about non-vaccinated super kids. That's what normal has become and is becoming or has become the normal now is becoming is the non-vaccinated super kid and their super kid compared to the vaccinated kids who are not necessarily doing as well in terms of the overall health or meeting milestones and so forth as infants and toddlers and young children. And you're absolutely right. We're losing track of what's normal. And I had another caller this morning talking to me about the bill here in North Carolina seeking to remove the religious exemption. The problem here is not so much that the – in North Carolina, I think we have something on the order of 9 million population. It's not a particularly heavily populated state. And so there's something around, if I remember correctly, 1,200 people with religious exemptions. It's not a huge number of people. It's a very tiny percentage. We have one of the higher exemption rates in the country here. But the caller pointed out to me that the issue here is not that 1,200 people are going to get vaccines that weren't getting vaccines before. It's that those once they lock in the no exemption condition, that these hundreds of new vaccines that are under development that are coming down the pike, there's no way to say no to them either once the law is in place and says you can't say no to vaccines. So it's bad enough that you suddenly have to get all the vaccines that are required currently, but there's a tunnel here with no light at the end of it, endless more vaccines to add to it. And even if you were thinking, well, gee, I think the vaccines are pretty good, I bet if you said to people, there's going to be hundreds, you know, there are hundreds more vaccines coming. Are you okay with hundreds of new vaccines too? I think that's something, you know, the more vaccines that become required or that we're pressured to get, encouraged to get, the more this becomes, first of all, the more injuries and deaths result from vaccines because there is some degree of cumulative effect, at least from what I understand. And so we're going to see more and more of that. And more people, and probably more and more severely as you add in more and more vaccines for each person. But as you keep pointing out, Sherry, such a critical issue, it's not just about the childhood vaccines either. There are plans to, first of all, vaccinate all U.S. adults with the flu vaccine, but then to follow that up with revaccination for all the childhood infectious disease vaccines, and then, you know, these literally hundreds of other new vaccines. We don't even know what most of them are, but they're going to be trying to continually add more and more vaccines. What are we going to do, you know, if this keeps on going? So what we're fighting right now, as critical as it is for what's required right now, that's only a small piece of the larger puzzle. We got a caller on the line, Sherry. You want to take a caller here? Because we're eating up the hour pretty quickly here.
Sure.
Okay, we have a caller, area code 215. You are on the air.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much. And hi, hello?
Hello, welcome. Welcome, hello. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yes, I can. I wasn't sure if you could hear me. I thought maybe I pushed mute by accident. Thank you very much. Just sincerely, thank you for all that you're doing, you know, and just the conversation so far has been so insightful, as always. I just had two questions, if possible, I could ask. One is, I'm just wondering, the more they take away our rights in making a choice for our own children and whether they get vaccines or not, do they even tell the parents the risk? I mean, would that just be gone in the conversation with the doctor and, you know, parent or patient? I mean, I think I remember signing something. I don't know if you sign it every time or just the initial one for the HPV in the hospital, but I thought you had to sign that, you know, yes, I understand there are risks for this vaccine. So what happens then? They don't even need to tell you the risks, or they don't acknowledge them, it seems. I don't, just wondering where, it just seems kind of an odd situation.
Well, part of the problem, and this is something, you know, there's this so-called vaccine education that all three of the West Coast states require now, and Minnesota, I think, is trying to add something like that, and maybe New Jersey as well. It's something that's catching on. You know, my biggest objection to that whole idea is that they're going to decide what they think the education should be, and of course, it's going to be very one-sided, biased, probably some misinformation or whatever. But even if that's what they do, if they're following federal law, they still have to inform you about the vaccine injury compensation program. And I don't think anybody's done any kind of widespread statewide or national surveys to find out how many pediatricians or other doctors are actually doing that.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think they've done anything recently, but there were some studies that were published several years ago, you know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, saying that the percentage of doctors, pediatricians, who actually handed out the VIS statements, the vaccine information statements for parents to read and sign before they got the vaccine, it was like less than 20%. It was very low. Now, I don't know if that's changed over time, and I don't know that they've done anything recently, but you're right, Alan. It's very, very low, and if they could find a way to enforce that, I think that things would really open parents' eyes.
Okay, my follow-up is just because it seems like they downplay the risks so much, and you know, I'm just thinking now as I'm saying this, and I read in the New Jersey bill something that just was so bizarre to me. It said, for clarification, just so you know, that is not solely for religious reasons, not due to a risk, a concern for the risk of the safety and efficacy. And I thought, what? You're coming right out and so blatantly saying, I'm not turning this down because of fear or concern about a risk, you know, for, you know, safety. And then it just made me think that they downplay it so much. And when I went to the pediatrician recently for my children's checkup, she points out, you know, if I, you know, questioning it and whatever, she points out, well, you don't remember what it, you know, you don't know, but when I was starting out, you know, in residency, I used to see these diseases all of the time, and now I'm just not seeing them. And she was just trying to say that the risks are so, you know, are nothing compared to what it was like apparently before these vaccines. So I that was kind of one argument. I wasn't really sure. I brought up the neurological, and you're not even looking at, you know, half of the things that could be attributed to vaccines. But I hear that argument a lot, and I think she genuinely believed that, this pediatrician, and she didn't know that. I brought up other things about the CDC whistleblower. She had no idea what that was. What? And I said, you know, about the aluminum and it was, you know, placebo. You know, she was like, well, the minuscule amount of aluminum in the HPV vaccine, it really is nothing compared to what you're getting from the vaccine. So I guess my point is, these people really seem to believe it, at least on some level.
Of course. I mean, I believe that the majority of doctors are perfectly well-meaning people of integrity, and they believe they're doing the right thing. The question is, why do they believe that? Where are they getting their information from, you know, and why aren't they aware of, you know, the other information? There was a documentary filmmaker from Australia traveling around the country a couple of years ago interviewing people on both sides of the issue. I mean, he was interviewing a nationally respected doctor at Duke University, an expert on vaccines, and he made some reference in conversation with this doctor about the vaccine court. And the doctor says, what are you talking about? There's no such thing as a vaccine court. This was in 2012 when the system had been paying out money for something on the order of 23 years, you know, and this guy has never heard about it. You know, where do they get their information, or why don't they have complete information? But I want to make a real quick comment about the New Jersey bill, because I think part of what was going on there is what it looked like to me is they were trying to define in the statute itself what does and doesn't qualify for religious exemption. And that's not something that's really up to us to decide in terms of the way the legal system works. That's really up to the courts to decide. So I think the legislature was really overstepping its authority there, because whether or not anything it says about how to define religion would be enforceable is a separate question, because that's ultimately decided by the Constitution and how courts have interpreted the Constitution. So the legislature doesn't really have authority to overstep those constitutional boundaries. But historically, what's gone on in these court cases is that concerns about adverse events do not qualify for religious exemption. And so that piece of what they were trying to say there was at least technically correct in terms of the way the law works. But that whole section as a whole, I thought they were really stepping over their authority there, trying to limit or define what qualifies for religious belief. And that's not really up to legislatures in any detailed way. That's really up to the courts. Sherry, any thoughts there on those things?
Nope, I think you covered it, Alan.
Okay. Well, caller, thank you so much for those points. It's you know, it's one of the ongoing questions and difficulties, because our legislators and most of our doctors have sets of information that are incomplete and skewed, or in some parts and pieces probably flat out false. And yet it comes from the authorities. And so how do you convince these people when they're the experts, especially the medical doctors in particular, when they're the experts, how do you get them to listen to, you know, us? Sherry, of course, not you, because you're one of those experts, but the rest of us who aren't medical doctors, we're not experts. And how do we get them to hear what we have to say? Because what we're trying to ask, what we're really asking them to do is to consider the fact that they've been duped, and that the world we live in is much more complicated and not as simple and pretty as they would like it to be in some respects. Not to say that there are not wonderful people and wonderful things in the world. There certainly are. But Sherry, I don't know about you, but I have to keep reminding myself that, because I'm so immersed in so much of this, so much of the time. It's like I have to remind myself to come up for air once in a while and say, oh, wow, there are some really wonderful people and wonderful things on the planet. And I tell you, some of it is right here in the alternative vaccine world. People like you, Sherry, and the people that call in. And we all really help each other recognize there's a wonderful therapeutic benefit, in a sense, if not literally, the sort of the reality check, which is why I love doing this show and talking with you, Sher, every week, and the people who call in, because we can sort of pinch each other and say, no, it is real, and it's difficult, and this is tough stuff, but we got some really wonderful people to work with on it, and I'm just really delighted.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's amazing to me sometimes, Alan, you know, that, you know, I see it in my practice every day in terms of, it's amazing to me how people can be experts in something they know absolutely nothing about. You know, I see, you know, it's like, I mean, seriously, they know nothing about the problems associated with vaccines. In their own literature, I mean, the Vaccine Research Library has 6,500 articles, and there's 7 to 12 more that we find every week that are articles and links to articles and abstracts. The reason to subscribe to the library is convenience. I mean, I have a researcher that works 20 to 25 hours a week and has for 3 years gleaning out these articles and putting them into the library. So the subscription fee, which is $9.98 a month, $24 for 3 months, or $99 a year, that money just goes to pay her and one other employee that works for me, actually two other employees that work for me in getting this information out. And so it's self-sustaining in that it pays their salary. And so but it's convenience. I mean, do you have 20 to 25 hours a week for 3 years to try to find articles associated with problems with vaccines? And so I see it in my practice every day that people come in and they've come from the Cleveland Clinic, and they've been misdiagnosed by things that conventional medicine should have diagnosed. And I say to my patients, I say, you know, it's one thing for them to throw stones at alternative medicine or integrative medicine and say it's a bunch of quackery and this and that, but do your job. You know, I don't expect you to know my stuff, but do your stuff. And the same thing, you know, it's like you may not know what the alternatives are on the conversation of vaccines and vaccine injury, but don't be throwing stones at it just because you don't know anything about it and haven't taken the time to research it and look at it. And it's really becoming old to me, Alan, to hear all of this slanderous comments about people. It's like if you do not want march goose step to the pro-vaccine message, then you're a quack, you're stupid, you're a baby killer, you're all these other things. And it's like, really? Really? Why don't we bring some civility back to this conversation and say, listen, I'll listen to your side if you listen to mine, and see if we can't have an adult-to-adult conversation about it.
And that's really the task I think we have, Sherry, is to try to bring some civility into the arena. And, of course, the reason they act the way they do many times is because they're trying to keep that from happening. Well, we're out of time here. We've got to scoot. Sherry, it's been wonderful, as always. Looking forward to talking with you again next week. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Proudly rebroadcast on naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And we will be back here next week, folks. See you then.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no